You're holding on Kofala from a day's 8 lines from the bottom. We learned yesterday, the Gemara had talked about that we had a machlokes of Yehuda and the Chachamim, whether you need 3 or 5 dayanim for Chalitza. In the end, we said that Rabbi Yehuda retracted his opinion. He agrees that you only need 3. Nevertheless, though, we're saying that you should have 5 in order to be mefarsim of the thing, because you want to give more publicity to the fact that Chalitza was done. So Rav Ashi equal the Beir of Kahana. The Gemara says Rav Ashi one time visited the house or the yeshiva of Rav Kahana. He was actually one of Rav Kahana's talmidim, so maybe this means that he actually came to his house. Amalei, and Rav Kahana tells him, Solik ma'ala gabon lamaluya be'chamisha. Come join us to fill out the 5. We have three people already for chalit, so we need another 2. You can be one of them. Similarly, Amar of Kahana, Habakkah Imir Kameder of Yehuda. So Kahana himself says, in a previous generation, I was standing in front of Rabbi Yehuda, but Amali, and he tells me, Tosak Lazirza Dakani, go up to the pile of reeds. Apparently, it was a landmark of some kind. Leitzdurofi Bechamisha, in order to join together for the 5. We learned yesterday, this is the Dakani business, we learned yesterday, one of the last things the Gemara had said, is that you have to be Kevei HaMakim, you have to establish the place for the Chalitza beforehand. And again, the Pasuk says, Va'olsi Yivim Ta'ashayra, that she comes to the gate, which implies a certain pre-designated area. And again, we talked about in Shulchan Aruch that there's machlokas haposkim. Does it have to be designated right before or the night before or whatever? So here it's an example of that kind of thing, where he's telling him to go to a certain place that we're going to designate that for the place of chalitza. And the poskim also argue. So the poskim talk about it. Is it enough to designate it verbally, or do they actually have to go sit there? And is it enough if only some of them go, or do all 3 or all 5 of them have to go? Anyway. They said to Rav Yehuda, Lomali Chamisha, what do you need 5? We just established before the halacha is you only need 3. And again, Amlahu Kechad Lefaris and Milsa, in order that it should be publicized. So we have 5, even though technically you only need 3. A similar case. So we said yesterday, Rashi gives 2 reasons. Number 1 is because a woman does not necessarily afterwards have a document showing that she had chalitza, unlike a get, where she keeps either the get or nowadays she keeps the receipt for it. You want people to know she's a chalitza, so she doesn't end up marrying a kohen. And number 2, you want people to know that she's a chalitza, to know that she's available, so she can get shidduchim. And she's also participating in the issur, though. He should check it out, but she's also participating in the issur.
Check it out.
Yeah.
It's a piersim.
It's a piersim, yeah. Another similar example, Rav Shmuel by Yehuda have a koi kameder of Yehuda. One time Rav Shmuel by Yehuda was standing in front of Rav Yehuda, Amalei, and Rav Yehuda tells him, Sak tol azir zedekani, go up to the pile of weeds, maybe it was the same pile, maybe that was their regular place for chalitza, I don't know. Leitzdirufi bechamisha, to join, to be a member of the 5, lefarsumi milsa, to publicize the matter. But this time there was a problem. Amalei, Rav Shmuel by Yehuda tells him, Tanena, we learned in a Braisa, which we learned yesterday, Be Yisrael, that the Pasuk says that the Chalitza has to be done Be Yisrael, and we actually learned it says twice Be Yisrael, which means Be based in Yisrael, but like Be based in Shogerim. It has to be done by a based in of Yisrael, not by a based in of Gerim. V'an no Ger, I'm a Ger. Now, how does he come to be a Ger if he has the name of Shmuel Bar Yehuda? Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda. So what happens? So Tosfos quotes Rabbeinu Tam that his father is a character, an Amora who's mentioned a couple of times in the Gemara, Rav Yehuda Hindavar. Rav Yehuda Hindavar can either mean from India or from Ethiopia or whatever. This Rav Yehuda himself was a Ger. So apparently what happened is, Rabbeinu Tam says, he and his father together were Nisgayer. La halacha, he's not considered his father's son, as we discussed the other day, but practically speaking, everybody called him by his father's name. So therefore, so I'm a ger. So therefore, I can't join in the 5. And the truth is, the post can talk about the question. We're saying that the 3 have to have certain criteria. We said yesterday they can be hedyotis, although we discussed yesterday what Rashi and Tosfos say, whether that means according to Rashi they have to know the halachas, they just don't necessarily have smicha, or according to Tosfos they just know how to read the psukim. Do the other 2 who are only there to be mefaris in the thing, do they have to have those same qualifications also? But based on our Gemara, it would seem that yes, because he's saying I'm possible because I'm a ger. But there is actually a machlokes haposkim about that, and part of the answer is it depends actually whether they first gather together the three, and then after they're already gathered, then the other two join them. Then the other two don't necessarily have to be chayim, because they're only there in order to publicize the thing, as opposed to if you get all five of them to begin with, which is the usual way of doing things, then you have to have all of them have the same qualifications, because otherwise people aren't going to know who's who.
And the other.
So that halacha is, it depends how you gather them. As a practical matter, they do usually gather all five of them together, and therefore all five of them should be qualified. It doesn't necessarily, usually what they do is in Shulchan Aruch it says that you have the three are dayanim from town, and the other two can be like important balabatim or whatever. They don't necessarily have to be dayanim, but yeah. Speaking of this Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, Amar of Yehuda, Kigoyin Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, let me tell you something about Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda. Somebody like him, he's so trustworthy that somebody like him, Mapiknim Amona Apumei, I would take away money from one person to give to another in a din Torah based on his testimony. In other words, if Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda comes to Beis Din and says that Reuven owes Shimon money, then yes, I would consider that enough of a basis to tell Reuven to pay. He says, what do you mean, my pishna stop that? What do you mean, I'd take away money from Reuven to give to Shimon? Well, pishnai made him amarachmana. The fact is, the Torah says you got to have two edim. Very nice, he's a very trustworthy person, but the Torah says that's not good enough. Ella, no. What he didn't mean I'm going to take away money from Reuven and give it to Shimon, money that Reuven has a chazak in. He means Ella Maraina Shtara Apume. He means that, for example, if Shmuel Bar Yehuda would come to Beis Din and say that here you have Reuven is holding an IOU, which says that Shimon owes him money, but Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda would come to Beis Din and say, I happen to know that Shimon paid him back, then Rav Yehuda is saying, I would accept that as enough evidence to say, in that case, Reuven, you can't collect based on this shtar. Unless you can bring evidence to the contrary.
Marana
means I'd make it bad. I'd consider it a defective shtar. Apume, based on what he says.
It's an interesting concept that he doesn't have to be required to give a guy, just like you give a guy a shtar, you give a guy a receipt. So he could prove that he paid.
Usually, but not
necessarily.
But not necessarily. Tosfos discusses the exact thing over here. What exactly do we mean? Do we mean, for example, that he might not be able to that he might not be able to collect without swearing that the other guy owes him, or whatever? There's a bunch of possibilities. Getting back to the matter of the ger, Amar Rava, ger donas chaveda dvar Torah. Mina Torah, a ger is allowed to judge other gerim. The pasuk says you should place over you a king, and Hashem chooses from among your brothers. You have to place upon you a king, which means only over you, born Jewish people, do you have to have that the king or any other leader has to be from among your brothers. But a ger would be allowed to judge other gerim.
Isn't that just for a melech?
No, so because we're saying that the rule in general, we say, we learned earlier in the Masechta, that because it says soim tosim, a double expression, it means not only a king, it means any kind of position of leadership. Kol mesimis shatam mesim, yeah. But so he says, again, he can judge other gerim. Now Rashi says, this is talking about dinin nefashis. This is talking about capital cases. Cases of dinin mominis, Rashi says, a ger could judge even born Israelis. Tosfos disagrees with that. Tosfos says, over here and earlier in the Masechta, Tosfos disagrees with that. And no, Tosfos says what we're talking about over here is dinei mominus. A ger cannot sit on a beis din for dinei mominus when born Jews are being judged.
So if you cannot do it on dinei mominus, sure.
Then for sure not on dinei nefashis.
On dinei nefashis.
Right. Tosfos holds that a ger would not be able to sit on a beis din for dinei nefashis at all, whether the defendant is a ger or a born Jew. For dinei mominus, if it's a ger, then the Gemara is saying over here that it's fine. If the one being judged is a ger. Very nice. V'ahavtem et a ger, but still there are rules. Rules are rules. I mean, you know, v'ahavtem et a ger, but a kohen can't marry geirus, right? You know, it's not a matter of not loving them, but you know, there are rules. Okay, and you know what? Sometimes we do find exceptions. I mean, for example, you know, Shmai of Avtalion were, according to one opinion, they themselves were Geirim. Another opinion is that they were descended from Geirim, and yet we find they were the heads of the Sanhedrin. Because, okay, when there's no choice, when there's nobody else available, then who's of their caliber, fine, that's different.
Yeah.
Same way as we find that Devorah was a shofet, even though normally a woman is not a shofet. Same idea. However, if this person, if his mother was Jewish, meaning he's the son of a ger, so his father was a ger, but his mother was a born Jew, yeah, well then don't have to be Yisrael. Then he can judge even a full-fledged Yisrael. Because Ula Inyan Chalitza, however, when it comes to Chalitza, Achia of Imam Yisrael, both his father and his mother have to be born Jews. Shenem of Nikra Shemai Yisrael, because the Pasuk says, his name shall be called in Yisrael, meaning there has to be 100% Yisrael from all sides. Actually, Tosfos Yishonim discusses the question even, what about, for example, if both his parents are born Jews, but one of his grandparents was a ger, would he be possible for a Beis Din of Chalitza? So do we say
that?
What? That's what the Gemara is saying over here. The son of a ger is not good for... that's what the Gemara is saying over here. Inyan Chalitza, Achi Hei Oviv V'Imei Mi Yisrael. Yeah. Both his father and his mother have to be born Jews. And that's what I'm saying. Tosfos Yishonim asks the question, V'Sofet V'Yad Mori, this is the halacha. So like I say, Tosfos Yishonim asks the question, V'Sofet V'Yad Mori, my Rebbe has a question, I Pasil Nadoros, Kid Pasil Nalakoyen Basger. Do we say that the Psul goes down the generations? Just like by a Koyen, we say the daughter of a Ger is also possible. We learned a couple of weeks ago. Do we say the same thing over here, that the children or grandchildren or whatever of Gerim would be possible for a Beis Din of Chalitza? We don't know. Okay, so now we've covered who is eligible to be on the Beis Din for Chalitza and how many we need. Next thing we need to talk about is the shoe. What kind of shoe you use. So to recap, the Mishnah had mentioned that if you do with a min'ol, which means a shoe, then the Chalitza is kosher, which seems to imply it's kosher, but yeah, the Chalitza you shouldn't. But if you did banpilya, if you did it with a sock or something made out of cloth, then it's possible. And then it talked about various kinds of sandal, a sandal that has a heel or a sole or that doesn't, whatever. So, Amar Rav, Amar Rav Kahana, Amar Rav. Im Yovei Eliyahu v'yoymar chotzen b'minol. If Eliyahu Navi were to come and tell us that you can do chalitza with a shoe, which in those days the minhag generally was to do it with a sandal. Now, what's the difference between a shoe and a sandal? We talked about yesterday. There's a number of different explanations. Rashi says the difference is that a minol is made out of soft leather and a sandal is made out of hard leather, like they would boil the leather till it was hard. There's various other explanations, one of them being that a minol covers the top and the bottom of the foot, like a shoe that we wear nowadays. A sandal is basically just the bottom, and then there's straps over the top, like modern-day sandals. A few different explanations. Anyway, it seems that in the time when this was said, anyway, in Rabba Omer Khan Omer Rab, that the usual practice was to use a sandal. So if Eliyahu Navi comes and tells us, Chilton Mimino, you can do Chalitza using a shoe, Shemin Loi, good, we'll listen to him. Why not? He's not contradicting what everybody does. But Ain Chilton the sandal, Ain Shemin Loi. But if he were to come and tell us, we may not do Chalitza with a sandal, we're not going to listen to him. Because the people already have a minug to use a sandal. So even Eliyahu Navi is not going to be able to overturn that. So Mefarshim talk about that what we mean, so one explanation is we've talked about before, there's two ways in which Eliyahu Navi can come. He can come as a neshama, basically. Then we say teretol v'shamayim anyway. We anyway don't pay attention to him in halacha. Or he can come in a human body, in which case, yeah, okay, not as a navi. Maybe a navi doesn't have any authority in halacha more than anybody else. In fact, the Rambam writes that a navi who says something of halacha in nevuah is a navi sheker. But he was a talmid chacham as well. He was the makabel masorah of his time. So he would be entitled to say his opinion in halacha, just like any other chacham. But he can't overturn the minhag that everybody has. And some Mefarshim bring in this connection the expression minug mevatel halacha. That sometimes we see that a minug can even override halacha. So even if Eliyahu Navi says his opinion la halacha that it's no good, but since the minug is already established like this, then we're not going to change it. Other Mefarshim say not necessarily as a matter of minug mevatel halacha. It's just as a practical matter. Since everybody is used to using a sandal, then nobody's going to pay any attention to what he says anyway.
But is that for the future? Or is he saying for the past?
He's saying for the future. No, but Pashto's not. I mean, once what's done is done. We're talking about for the future. A slightly different version, Rav Yosef Amar Rav Kahana. So this was Rabba said in the name of Rav Kahana. Rav Yosef says in the name of Rav Kahana a little differently, Amar Rav. Im Yove Eliyahu V'yamei Chotzen B'minol Shemin Loi. If Eliyahu were to come and say we may not do Chalitza with a shoe, then we would listen to him. But ein chotzin besandol, ein shemin lei. But if he said we may not do chalitza with a sandal, we would not listen to him. Again, shekar nogo on besandol, because everybody has a minhag to use a sandal. A mai benai, what's the practical difference between the two versions? The difference is, ikka benai umino lachachila. The machlokas between Rabba and Rabbi Yosef's versions is, can you lachachila use a minhag? According to Rabba's version, lachachila you should not be using a minhag. Lachachila you should be using a sandal, which is what everybody used in those days. If Elio comes and tells us you're allowed to use a minhag, good, but until he tells us, then no. According to Rabbi Yosef's version, on the contrary, we're allowed to use a minhag, and you're allowed to use a minhag, only if Elio comes and tells us not, then fine, then we'll change it, because nobody nowadays uses a minhag anyway.
So when Mashiach comes, what are we?
We don't know. We're going to see soon, actually, the Gemara is going to go further into this question of whether you should use a minhag or a sandal. The truth is, it's not so simple, actually, because you have the different definitions of what exactly a sandal is. Now you're going to have. The Gemara is going to talk about soon. There is a certain problem with a minhag that it might be ripped or whatever, and then you'd have a problem with it. Practically speaking, though, the shoe that they use nowadays for chalitza is more similar to a minhag than to a sandal, according to many of the explanations. It's not made out of such hard leather, for example. It's somewhat hard leather. It's not as hard as a sandal, though, necessarily. Yeah. Okay, the question is, according to Rav Yosef's understanding that you allowed l'chatchila to use a minhag, what about v'hatnan? We learned in our Mishnah, chaltz v'minhag, chalitza sekshera. If she did chalitza with a shoe, then the chalitza is kosher, which implies the evidence, l'chatchila lo is it. V'dievet, you did it with a minhag, then fine, l'chatchila you should be using a sandal. So what do you mean that l'chatchila you could use a minhag? The answer is, a minhag is a shoe. The answer is no. Who adin dafil lachatchila? No, you could say that the Mishnah means that you could even use a shoe lachatchila. But aidi divoy the misni sefer ban pilya chalitzas apsula. Since the next line of the Mishnah has to say that if you use a sock or a slipper or whatever, then the chalitza is possible. And there it has to say b'di'evad, because it means even b'di'evad, because it's made out of fabric. Because as the Gemara is going to talk about on Amud Beis, it has to be made out of leather. So therefore,
anything that's not a sock, including a minhag.
So therefore, since by the sock it had to say the d'yevid dick expression, d'yevid, so for parallelism, it uses the d'yevid expression to begin with also, even though really the Mishnah might be implying that you could do it on chila. So there's no proof one way or the other. And the Gemara points out, this machlokas about whether you can use a minhag lachatchila is actually a machlokas tanoim. The Tanya, Amar Rabbi Yosi, pamachas halachti l'netzivin, one time I went to Netzivin, as a city in northern Babel, nowadays it's like on the border of Iraq and Turkey or something. Matzasi zaken echad, I found an old man there. Amartilai, I asked him, Klumat Baki Rabbi Yehuda ben Deseira, are you familiar with Rabbi Yehuda ben Deseira? Rabbi Yehuda ben Deseira was a Tana who lived in Netzivin. We remember that there's a famous story at the beginning of Pesachim, how he caught that guy who was pretending, who was masquerading as a Jew and going and eating the Korban Pesach. You're in Netzivin and your net is spread all the way in your Shalayim, the famous story.
Ask for the fat tail.
So Rabbi Yosi asks this guy, do you know Rabbi Yehuda ben Deseira? Omali Hain. So he tells me yes, and in fact, Val Shulchani Hu Tadir. He's very often at my table. Which sounds like it means that Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseder was often a guest of his. Actually, Rabbi Yaakov Emden mentions in his notes on the Gemara, it's a little hard to say that, because we learn other Gemaras that say that it's a bad thing to have to be a regular guest by somebody else. Usually a person should be able to live on their own. So therefore, he quotes from the Yerushalmi, the Yerushalmi has the story also, that what the man meant is, I'm a Shulchani, by profession, I'm a Shulchani, I'm a money changer. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseder would often come to me to exchange money, to exchange coins. So therefore, yes, I know him very well. Okay, so Rabbi Yosi asks him, "Klumer isa shachalat biyavama? Nu, did you ever see him doing? Did you ever see him presiding over a chalitza as the head of the Beis Din?" Amali, sure. Raisi shachalat harbapam b'minole the sandal. Yes, I saw many times that he did chalitza with a shoe or a sandal. But Amali, so he says to me, "V'chi chelten b'minole." I don't understand. How can you? So actually, Rashi says not Omar Lee, because then what do you mean? The guy just reported that Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseder did it with a shoe. Why is he himself asking if that's the right thing to do? So Rashi says Omar Loi, that Rabbi Yosi said to him, How is that possible? Can you do chalitza with a shoe? The Torah says you have to use na'al. If it meant a shoe, it would say minnow. Now Rashi says, I don't like that line, and that's why it's in parentheses over here. Because actually in Tanakh, you never find the word minnow. In Tanakh, the standard word for shoe was always na'al. Minnow was loshen chachamim. So now that wouldn't be a question why it said na'aloi rather than minnowloi. Rather, the question is, forget that, but we're going to say soon, the Gemara is going to explain soon, that there's a gzera of the chachamim that you should not use a minnow. So what are you telling me, that Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira sometimes use a minnow, sometimes use a sandal? How is that? So the question comes back then. In that case, if you can't use a minnow, then why did Rabbi Meir say that if you do chalitza with a shoe, chalitza sekshera, then the chalitza is kosher? If Rabbi Yehuda, evidently Rabbi Yossi understood that Rabbi Meir would have gotten his opinion from Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira. We find actually what's Rabbi Meir doing by Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira. We find the famous story that when Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava gave smicha to the five chachamim, this is the famous story where the Romans had outlawed smicha and announced that anybody who gives smicha, the whole city is going to be destroyed and everybody who's involved is going to be killed. It's a story in the first part of the Sanhedrin. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava goes to a valley, to a desolate valley between two far away from two cities, and he gives smicha to a number of the chachamim there, one of them being Rabbi Meir. And then afterwards, the Romans found out and they're approaching. So he tells them to escape, and he stays over there. And then, as an immovable wall, he's not going to move when the Romans are coming. And they ended up stabbing him with 300 spears. He's one of the Asarado Gemachos. So anyways, Rabbi Meir and all these chachamim, the Gemara mentions over there, all escaped. And I think either that Gemara or a different one, I don't remember, mentions that they wound up in Yitzivan and spent some time by Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira. So evidently, Rabbi Yossi is figuring that if Rabbi Meir's opinion that you can use a minnow must be based on Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira's. But the question is, how, if you're not supposed to use a minnow, then how does Rabbi Meir get that? Then how does Rabbi Meir get that you could? And Rabbi Yaakov Oymer Mishmoy Choltzin Mimino Lachatchila. Rabbi Yaakov says in the name of Rabbi Meir that not only it's kosher v'diyeved, but you can use a minnow lachatchila. Okay, so we have we see anyway that there's machloek hanoyim, the two different versions of Rabbi Meir, whether you can use a minnow lachatchila, which is Rabbi Yaakov's statement, or whether you can only use it v'diyeved, which is Rabbi Meir's statement. The Beis Yosef and the Bach, by the way, the Mepharshim have a little bit of a hard time with the wording of our Gemara over here. The conversation, who said what, seems to be a little mixed up. And they point to the Yerushalmi has the story, which is the Yerushalmi has the story a little more straightforward. Who said what? And also the Bach talks about the idea that this last thing over here about Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yaakov might be Rabbi Yossi himself quoting as part of the conversation what Rabbi Meir holds versus what Rabbi Yaakov holds in his name. Anyway, so we see it's Machlokes name. Okay, well, Mando Omar Lachatchila Loi my timer. So, the opinion that says that you can't, that Lachatchila, you should not use a shoe, why not? E lema mishum dehavya pansa me'al va'arakta me'al dema'al. Now, one way of looking at it is you could say like this. Again, what's one way of looking at the difference between a sandal and a shoe? A shoe covers the top of your foot as well, and you have laces. Think of like our shoes nowadays. You have the top of the shoe, and then you have laces which go over that top part, and the tongue and whatever that hold the shoe onto your foot. Versus a sandal. Again, according to Rashi, the idea would be a sandal is made out of hard leather. It doesn't really have laces that go over, that it does cover the top of your foot as well. It's sort of like a wooden shoe, but it doesn't really have laces that go over that top part because they wouldn't really do much good anyway. Or, according to the other Mepharshim, that a sandal basically covers the bottom of your foot. The straps go directly over the top of your foot, like modern sandals.
Hey, came about 15 minutes ago.
Why?
The black one.
Oh, yeah. That's
all right. So, one way of looking at it is that with shoes, with a minnow, you have the problem, pansa me'al, the top part of the shoe is me'al, it's on top of your foot. The araksa, and then the straps are me'al de me'al. They're on top of what's on top of your foot. The problem is, v'atar do'ama me'al v'lay me'al de me'al. What?
Araksa
is the straps. So if you have, in other words, the foot, Then there's the top part of the shoe, and then there's the straps, the laces that go over it. And you're going to say the problem is that the Torah says that she has to take the shoe directly off the foot, implying that she's not taking off something which is on top of something which is on top of the foot. So therefore, you would say that's why a minhag is no good. The question is, yachya for the di'evet nami. Then why does that opinion say that you can use a minhag for di'evet, just not like a chila? It doesn't just, yeah. If the Torah says me'al, then that's what it is. No. The answer is no. That's not the reason. The reason why you should not use a minnow, the Chachamim made a gzeira, because instead the shoe you use might be ripped. Since it, again, a minnow, according to Rashi, is made out of soft leather or soft material, or soft leather or whatever, even if it's ripped, it's still possible to wear it. As opposed to a sandal, which is made out of hard leather, once it's broken, you're not going to wear it anymore. The problem if it's ripped is that if most of the Yavam's foot still fits inside it, then fine, it's not such a problem. But what happens more than that is ripped, and you're not going to realize, because people in those days would sometimes wear torn shoes anyway, and then the chalitza is going to be possible. So because of that, we want to make a gzeira to prevent you from using a mino altogether. So but yeah, but you did fine as long as it was a whole one, then fine. But the chalitza, we don't want you to. That's what we're saying. In other words, basically it has to be that most of the foot fits inside it. Inami mishum chatzim minol, or you might have that you have only half of the shoe. And ripped versus half is basically the question: what part is missing? Ripped would mean the top part is ripped open, or some mafarshim say it means that the toes are sticking out or whatever. Chatzim minol would be basically that all you have left is the sole. Either way, you're going to have a problem with if too much of it is missing, so therefore we want to make a gzeira. Whereas a sandal, since either according to Rashi it's made out of hard leather, and if it's broken, you're not going to wear it anyway, so there's no reason to make a gzeira. Or according to the other Mephoshim, a sandal basically just consists of a sole with straps that go over your foot. So if it's broken, there's nothing left of it anyway. No, again, nobody's going to use it. Omer Rav. Further on this topic, Rav says, "Ilav de chamisi lechavivi de cholat besandol de isle shinsin." If it weren't for the fact that I saw chavivi, which means my uncle, which is Rav Chia, that he used to do chalitza using a sandal that has shinsin, ties, laces that you use for example for a bag.
Like you pull a bag closed using drawstring.
Thank you. I couldn't think of the word. Okay. So he used to use a sandal that has drawstrings. Now, that has an advantage that you can take it off very easily. You just untie the drawstring and it comes right off.
What's the drawstring?
Like, for example, think of like when you have a laundry bag or whatever. Yeah, you have the drawstrings, like you pull on the strings and it closes. Not laces. This is more like you pull on them to tighten it. You pull on it to tighten it, and then when you untie them and loosen them, then the thing comes right off. So Rav is saying I used to see my uncle, which is Rav Chia. He used to use a sandal that had drawstrings. If it weren't for that, though, so based on that precedent, we know that that's fine to use. If not for that, though, Rab says, "Anola havoy chalitzna elav sandal detayaa demhadik tfei." I personally would think that it would be better to use a sandal of tayaa. A tayaa literally means Arabs, like merchants. They used to walk around a lot, obviously, as part of their trading from place to place. So they would have shoes that were made to fit their feet very well, even better than with drawstrings like that. So Rav is saying, I would have thought it's better to do that kind. That stays even better on the foot than the kind that has drawstrings.
Even though the police are taking off the shoe.
You're taking off the shoe, but you want it to be firmly on to begin with. Because you want to have, we're going to talk about as we go further along, you want to have the whole chalitza is accomplished by the Yavama. The Yavam actually, it's actually mentioned in Shulchan Aruch, we have to be very careful by a chalitza that the Yavam is not really helping the process in any way, because it has to be the chalitza that she does, the complete chalitza.
She's taking off her own shoe?
No, not her own shoe. She's taking off his shoe.
Oh.
But it has to be, for example, we'll get to it today, tomorrow, as we go through the perek. But we'll see, for example, he has to put his foot firmly on the ground, and she has to actually lift up his foot. and untie the shoe and take it off.
Yeah.
Well, actually, now would be a good time to talk about, maybe, since you mentioned in the demeaning part, why Bechlal, I was mentioning yesterday, why Bechlal does the Torah give such an odd mitzvah, that was such an odd way for the Yuvama to get out of it? So there's actually a number of interesting reasons that that Rishonim and Achronim give for it. The Sefer Achinuch says an idea. What would have happened if the Yuvama had married the Yavam? She'd be his wife. Well, a wife does certain things around the house for her husband. One of them, in those days anyway, was she would help him take off his shoes. So therefore, symbolically now, she's saying, like, if you had been willing to marry me, I would have been doing this kind of thing regularly. I'd be taking off your shoes for you. Because you didn't want to do Yibum with me, therefore I'm doing it one last time, basically to show you what you're losing out on, and I'm spitting on the ground in front of you to show, from now on, I don't owe you any more covered. That's one. There's an explanation from one of the Rishonim. Now I don't know. Let me see. There's an explanation from Rabbi Chiyo of Paris and Maram Rutenberg that says something like that. She's saying that now that you're not willing to uphold your brother's name, now he's really dead after all. Now take off your shoes as if you're in mourning. And you didn't want to have a child with me which would have his neshama or his name or whatever, as we talked about earlier in the Masechta. So therefore she spits in front of him, which is also symbolic of Zera, saying, like, in other words, now you made it, there's not gonna be any Zera for your brother after all, he's a goner. A couple of other various reasons that are given. But yeah. So there is the idea that to some extent, according to many of them, it's a derogatory thing, not for the Yavama, but rather for the Yavam, that he's the one who's being shown that he's doing the wrong thing, basically. And the truth is, Rav Shem Shon Ephraim Hirsch has a different take on it. He says that actually it's he has a whole explanation which I'm not sure I quite followed, actually, saying that the idea of the chalitza is actually fakir, not to show that he's doing the wrong thing, but like to show how the family bond is being maintained. And I don't remember the details of how he gets that exactly.
But he's doing the same thing, even if she's the one who says no.
No, it could be either one of them, actually. Right, we did learn before that both of them have the right of refusal.
But she's saying no, and she's doing...
No, but she's not the one saying no. No, the original thing is she comes to Beis Din and says, my brother-in-law doesn't want him. May and Yuvami Larkin.
Right, but if she wants, he doesn't want him.
Oh, well, okay, fine. But the din is a din, you know. Yeah. Okay. True. Okay. Anyway. So Rav is saying that Rav Chiya used to use one that had drawstrings. I myself think it would be better to use one of Tayar, one of the Arab merchants, which fits more snugly on the foot. And the Gemara points out, the Haididan are kind of shoes or sandals. Afagav de ispe chumauta, even though it has a chumauta, which the two explanations in Rishonim, what chumauta means. One is that it means a knot. That ties the laces together and prevents it from falling off. And the other one is it means a loop that the laces go through. In practice, in chalitza shoes, they make both of them. Because the Gemara is mentioning it, therefore it's understood by the poskim that it's something important, it's something that's important to the shoe, and therefore they make the shoe in a way that it has both of those. Nevertheless, katrinen be minsa, mitna, nevertheless we tie straps onto it. So that way it'll be a proper chalitza. That way it's not just pulling off the shoe, she's actually untying the straps as well, untying the laces as well. So here I have a picture, actually, a couple of pictures that I copied from the Steinsaltz Gemara, showing what a chalitza shoe looks like, based on our Gemara, based on the next pieces of Gemara. So it has, among other things, it's all made out of leather, because the Gemara is going to point out on Amud Beis there can be problems if it's sewn together with other materials. You can see there's the straps there. You can see the chumauta over here. The knot here in the middle that holds the laces together. And you have a loop at the top, a bow at the top, which she undoes. She undoes that. She takes off the laces and she takes off the shoe. Yes, you're mentioning it's a very tall one. Actually, I don't know. Other pictures I've seen of chalitza shoes are not quite so tall. The one that you gave us some pictures of chalitza a couple of months ago, and they show a much shorter shoe. They show a shoe that only covers the lower part of the foot.
Arms, like,
Anyway, so far we have the understanding of a chalitza shoe is it has to have straps. We're saying that even though it has a knot or a loop, you still have to put straps on it, so that way she has what to untie. And we're saying it has to cover most of the foot. And we talked about minnow and sandal. Well, so that one, so the one that Steinsaltz diagrams covers the leg as well. The one that's in these pictures over here, the straps go partway up the leg, but the shoe itself is only on the foot.
They have the standard shoe they use, like when you go bowling. The shoe was only used for one chalitza, or the general shoe they
No, so it seems from the Gemara that in those days they did not necessarily have a specific shoe set aside for chalitza. They would have, because we're going to learn. And we're
allowed to use the same shoe.
Yeah, we learned yesterday that it has to belong to the Yavam, but what they do nowadays is they're machmeh to the Yavam. We'll learn about that later in the Gemara. Okay. So in those times, it seems they didn't necessarily have a special shoe for chalitza. They would take one of the shoes of one of the people over there and use that. Eventually, in later times, especially because making shoes in the way... Yeah, since the type of shoes they wore in the times of the Gemara were not common in later times, then they started the minhag of having a special one for this. And that way you're sure that it doesn't have any problems.
It happened also, chalitza, but just a few years ago.
Mishnah says, and the Gemara says, Simen HaTorah Yivama Sandal. We have a Simen for the next three statements of the Gemara. Amar of Yehoda Amar Rab, HaTorah Yivama Lashuk B'Shmitas Roi Va'Akim. When does the Yivama become mutter to marry anybody else? When she takes most of the Yavam's heel out of the shoe. In other words, it doesn't have to be the shoe completely drops to the ground. Let's say she takes she gets to the point of taking his heel out, and then all of a sudden he has a heart attack and dies. That's fine. At that point, she's already mutter l'shuk. The chalitz has been accomplished. No, but if there were other brothers, or if somebody mekadesh her at that point, yeah. I'm giving an example or whatever. Yeah. If the brother-in-law knew, whatever, like Yaakov said, if somebody was mekadesh her more at that point, we can ask. Time, yeah. Time of the Shema too. What are you saying? What are you saying? Shema. I skipped the line. Maybe the Gemara says I have a contradiction. Who threw Ritzuis Mino the sandal? If the straps, the laces of the shoe or the sandal were untied, or Shema to Roiva Regal, or he took out most of his foot, Chalitza Tepsula. Then the Chalitza is possible, because they were untied on their own, or he slipped it out. Time to Shama too, which implies only because he slipped it out is it a problem. Ha Shamta he Chalitza Tekshed, which implies if she took it out, then it's a Kasher Chalitza, but only Roiva Regal Ed, Roiva Okib Loi. We should take most of the foot, not just most of the heel. The answer is Loi. Hainu Roiva Regal, Hainu Roiva Okib. No, what the Braisa means by Roiva Regal really means most of the heel, not the whole foot. My korale roiva regal. So why do they call the heel most of the foot? It's only a small part of the foot. The kula chayla dekara ale dachis. Because when you stand, your whole weight rests on your heel. So therefore, it makes sense to call the heel most of the foot, even though in area it's not. Gemara points out Messiah le Rav Yanai. This braisa supports what Rav Yanai said. The Amr Rav Yanai ben shehitu hu v'shamtehi. Whether he untied the laces and she pulled off the shoe, ben shehitu hi v'shamatu, or she untied the laces and he took off the shoe, chalitza sepsula achatatu hi v'tashmiti. She has to untie the laces and she has to take off the shoe. That's what the braisa is saying. That if the laces got untied by themselves, or he took out his foot, then it would be possible. Because it has to be she does the whole thing. The chalitza, she has to do the entire chalitza. Boy, Rav Yanai, now Rav Yanai asked the question. What about if instead of taking off the shoe, what about if she did some other thing? Kra'asu mahu, what if she ripped it off his foot? Srafasu mahu, or what if she burnt it off his foot? Yeah, Rashi says ishtuka gachelas ala sandal. She put a coal on it. She put a coal on it, so it started burning. Yeah. Come on, it's one of these weird cases that Gemara is asking about for theoretical purposes. Yeah. The point is, galuya kara ba'in and vayika, is it enough that you're uncovering this foot? So you have it. She ripped open the shoe, the foot's uncovered. Ojom a chalitza ba'in and vayika. Or maybe you actually have to be taking off the shoe, and that's not taking off the shoe. Take off. You have to do it again. Yeah. Another question. What if the Yavam is wearing two shoes, one on top of the other? What do you mean? What case are you talking about? You're talking about that she took off the outside shoe and the inside shoe is still on. Of course it's no good. We just said before, Me'al Amar Rahman of Me'al Dema'al. The Torah says the shoe has to be taken directly off his foot, not off of something else, which is on top of his foot. So socks, actually, Tosafot Yeshanim points out that for that reason, the Yavam should not be wearing socks, based on the Gemara over here, and that's back in the Halacha, that the Yavam should not be wearing socks. Also, in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions that they tell the Yavam ahead of time to make sure to wash his foot carefully, so there's no dirt on it either, that might be a chassidah. Yeah. It would be nice of him to wash his foot anyway, so the Yavam doesn't have to deal with his foot odor, but that's another matter.
Oh, we don't do the
hatays
only on the
Okay. So the answer is loitzricha. No, the case that the case that Rabbi Nechemia is asking about could be the karate liloi. What if she ripped off the outside shoe? The shalakti latatoi. Now she didn't rip it off completely. She ripped open the outside shoe. So now there's room enough to take off the inside one. The shalakti latatoi. Then she took off the inner shoe. The koi loi, and the outside one is still there. So my chalitza being involved. So do you need? Is it that you need chalitza? Well, she took off a shoe and directly off his foot. I do a galuya kaya being in, or maybe you need to actually completely uncover his foot. But like that, and then you don't have it because you still have the outside shoe. So my ask to me, kikai gabna. Where have you ever heard of such a thing? People wearing one shoe on top of another. So Tosfos asks the question, what kind of a question is that? And you don't have all kinds of other weird cases of thinking about it. So Tosfos asks the question. No, the question is, it's not a normal thing to wear two shoes on top of another. What makes you think that would be a valid method of chalitza? The answer is, ain't. Yes, you sometimes have people walk that way. One time that Rabbanan saw Rav Yehuda, that he went out to the street wearing five pairs of felt slippers. One pair on top of, maybe it was cold, whatever. Yeah. So you see that, yes, sometimes people do wear one set of shoes on top of another. Incidentally, Rashi does an interesting linguistic thing in Rashi over here. Rashi points out the word muk is the Arabic word for a shoe. And this is one of the rare places where Rashi quotes a word in Arabic. That's probably why it's so rare, but I guess once in a while, yeah. Omer of Yehoda Omer Rav. Yevama sheik dila bein ha'achin. If a Yevama grew up among the brothers, in other words, let's say, for example, you could have, for example, that the Yavama is a stepsister of the Yavamim. You know, you had a bunch of brothers from the father's first marriage. He adopted, let's say, you know, he was married to two women. One of them also previously had children from another marriage. We talked about blended families like that before. He adopted them, and then the family was a Yavama. So she grew up as if she was a sister of the other brothers, but really she's not. She's not related to them in any way. There's no blood relation. She might end up marrying one of them, and now she might end up doing yibum with one of them if her husband died. So muteres l'nasil echad min achin. She's allowed to marry one of the brothers. What's the chiddush? The inchoshin shema cholza sandal echad mehen. We don't have to be concerned that maybe sometime over the years when they were growing up at home, maybe one time she took off one of their sandals, and that might be considered chalitza, in which case she would be possible to do yibum to any of them. We're not worried about that.
You didn't have it before the husband passed away?
No, we're talking about it might have happened after he passed away, but even so, we're not worried about it.
Don't really need kavanah.
And I ask the question. That's the question. Time of Deloy Chazinan. So what does that imply? If we never saw it happen, then fine, we don't have to worry, maybe it happened. Ha Chazinan, but what would happen, it sounds like we're saying, if one time we saw, after her husband died, that she actually did take off one of their sandals, Chashinan, does that mean we should be concerned? Why? Don't you need Kavana? V'atanya, ben she niskaven huvela niskavenahi, whether he has Kavana for Chalitza and she does not have Kavana, ben she niskaven hevel and niskaven hu, or the other way around, she meant it and he didn't. Chalitza sepsola, then it's a possible chalitza. Ad she iskavenu shneim keechad, until they both have the proper kabana. So what are you worried about? So why would we even think that Stam taking off his shoe would be an issue?
What do we think that when the Gemara?
So first of all, what kind of kabana are we talking about over here? There's actually a few different possibilities. One possibility is it means they have kavana that the chalitza is going to accomplish what it's supposed to, that she'll be mutal l'shuk. Another way of looking at it is it's a kavana for a kinyan, that effectively she's being kona, that now she's free now and able to marry whoever she wants. Well, and of course you need kavana because kinyan requires a kavana. The Aruch HaShulchan has an interesting take on it. He says He says the vart is, mainly with other kinds of mitzvahs, you don't necessarily need kavanah. We learned back in Rosh Hashanah mitzvahs and srichas kavanah, because these are not things you normally do. You're not normally going to blow a shofar except on Rosh Hashanah. You're not normally going to wave a lulav and esrog around except on Sukkot. So fine, even if you don't have the proper kavanah, you can still be yoy to the mitzvah because you're doing it. Chalitza, you take off shoes all the time. And we learned before, a wife sometimes will take off her husband's shoes. A sister might take off her little brother's shoes, etc. If you're going to say that you're yoy to, if you're going to say that the mitzvah is takes place without kavanah, then there's not going to be a difference between chalitza in Beis Din versus any other kind of chalitza. So therefore, we'd have to have kavanah. Anyway, so back to our question over here. Suppose that sometime during this time when they were growing up together, she took off one of their shoes. So what? Neither of them meant anything for chalitza. The answer is hachikama. Okay. Yeah, we're talking about after the thing. Right, if you did it while he was alive, obviously it's not an issue. That's what the Gemara is asking over here. That's what the Gemara is asking. You need intention. Both of them need to have intention. The answer is, hachikama, what the Braisa, not the Braisa, what Rav Yehuda Amar Rav means, afagav dechazinan. Yes, even if one time while they were living together, we actually saw her taking off his shoe, ein choshen shemakibnu, then we don't have to worry that they might have had kavanah. Because, as we said, they need kavanah, so without it, it's not a problem. The Ikadamri, however, others say a different version. No, like we said before, time of delay chazinan. No, witnesses you don't necessarily have to have. We will talk about later that you should have witnesses, but you don't necessarily have to. Technically, all you need is a Beis Din. And actually, we're going to have later on Kuf Dalet, Kuf Hey, we're going to have an opinion that you can do Chalitza even Beinu Levena, even just the two of them alone. Anyway. The Ikadamri, others say, no, the explanation is different. Taima Delei Chazinan, you're right. Only if we never saw her taking off his shoe, we don't have to worry that maybe sometime when we weren't watching, she did it. Ha Chazinan Chashishin, but that would imply if we did one time see her taking off his shoe, we would have to be Chashish. I Ud Chatana Boy Kavana. I, we said before that you need Kavana for the Chalitza to be kosher. Hani Milish Derui La'alma. That means you need kavanah in order for it to be a proper chalitza in the sense that she'll be mutter to everybody else. Aval achin mifsala, but just to make her possible to marry any of the other brothers, we learned earlier in the Masechta, we had cases of chalitza psula, where we said that the chalitza, even though it was possible, even though there was something or other wrong with it, it's nevertheless enough to asser her to all the brothers in marriage. Now she needs a proper chalitza. We learned even before, according to Rav, that tzricha lachzer kol achim, that now all the brothers have to give her a chalitza because now the zikah has been weakened, etc. So that's what we're saying over here. If we never noticed her taking off his shoe, then fine, we don't have to worry about it. But if we ever noticed her taking off his shoe, then yes, we do have to be concerned that she might be possible to all the brothers now, and that a proper chalitza needs to be done, and then yibum can't be done anymore.
One shoe or the
foot? No, it's a one shoe. It's the right foot.
No,
because it could still be that. Again, we're saying that you don't need kavanah, according to this understanding. You don't need kavanah in order for it to be considered a chalitza. You just need kavanah in order to be considered a chalitza kshera, for it to be matir or to marry anybody else.
We didn't see her, but actually we heard that she took off his shoes.
I don't know. To be concerned about. Okay, going back to the matter of the shoe, what kind of shoe does it have to be? Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, sandal atof of a pishtan ein chelzin bay, a sandal that is sewn with linen, you cannot use it for chalitza. Now, what do we mean by sewed with linen? Rashi says two possibilities. One is that it means that it has insole made out of linen. So you have a regular shoe made out of leather, and inside it, like nowadays, you have these insoles that you can buy from Dr. Scholl's or whatever. So you put inside it an insole made out of linen. That's one. So it would be a problem, actually. That's Rashi's first explanation. Rashi's second explanation is it means that the shoe is sewn together with linen thread, like our shoes. You think of a modern-day shoe. It's not made out of one piece of leather. It's made out of several pieces that are sewn together.
You have a wooden bottom and a leather top.
We'll get to wood and leather. We'll get to wood and leather tomorrow, I think.
Yeah.
No, but here we're talking about the whole shoe. According to Rashi's first explanation, the whole shoe is made out of leather. It just has an insole. Inside, it has linen. Either way, though, we're saying it's a problem. And in fact, for that reason, in these pictures of a chalitza shoe, you can see the whole shoe is held together with leather. It's sewn together with leather straps, and then you also have the leather straps that hold it onto the foot. Precisely because of our Gemara that we're saying that it's going to be a problem. Why? It's no good. Ein chiltzin bo, you cannot use that for chalitza. Shenema v'ein oleich tachash. The pasuk in Yechezkel, the whole long extended marshal about how Hashem took care of the Jewish people, comparing them to the we have the pasukim in Haggadah v'ever alayach v'erech mispesefes to demayich. Maybe she says I passed by and I saw you wallowing in your blood. V'ayim alach demayich chayi, etc. So the pasuk goes on to say how in the marshal the guy takes this girl that he finds abandoned in the field and brings her home and raises her and eventually marries her, and in the nimshol it's the Eibishter and the Jewish people. So there's an expression. The pasuk says, "V'ayin alech tachash." I gave you shoes of tachash. Now tachash is an animal. We know the famous thing that Rashi says that is a multicolored animal. Yeah. So it's leather. So therefore, we see that a na'al is defined as being made out of leather. So therefore, if it has linen in it, no good. It's not tachash. No, where Rashi says it's multicolored, there's different explanations. One second. I'll tell you, actually, Tosfos mentions over here, we know Tosfos said that actually it can't have been a zebra because Tosfos says we know it has to have been a kosher animal because what's the famous thing they use the tachash for? They use the skins of it for the roof of the Mishkan. Everything that was used for the Mishkan has to be from a dove or tahar, just as everything that's made for tefillin and mezuzahs and whatnot has to be a dove. So it can't be a zebra. Rashi says that it was an animal that existed only at that time and went extinct.
That was the one with the horn.
That's the one with the one horn, and it was multicolored, etc. But anyway, Tosfos says, Rabbi Natan says an interesting thing based on this. If we're saying, if our Gemara is saying that we learn from this pasuk in Yechezkel v'ayin alech tachash what the definition of a na'al is, then it means it has to be made out of the skin of a kosher animal. Now, many Rishonim and Achronim have a hard time with that, and they ask various questions on that. But nevertheless, that is the accepted halacha in deference to Rabbi Natan that they use the skin of a behemoth tahara. Okay, question is, Ema tachash ein midi achrin aloi. Nu, if you're going to say that you're learning from tachash, maybe it means the true davgat mimena tachash leather and nothing else. The answer is loy, na'al na'al riba. No, because the pasuk uses the word na'al twice, v'cholta na'al me'al raglov, and base chalutan na'al. So the extra word na'al riba comes to include anything else. Okay, inal now riba filo kol milinami. Fine, and in that case, include everything else, meaning cloth also. Imken tachash ma'ayanile. No, but after all, you have the word tachash. So you have the fact that we have the pasuk in Yechezkel teaches us it has to be from tachash. The na'al na'al comes to extend it to any other kind of leather, or according to Ben Tam, any leather from a kosher animal, but nothing else. That's not leather. Next, Baminei Rav Elazar Mirav, who shall utres Yosef shall say or mahu? What if the shoe itself is made out of leather, but the straps of it are made out of hair? Is that good? Amalei says, sure. Milei Karin and Beivan Alach Tachash. After all, you can also call it that it's made out. That I made you shoes out of Tachash. The hair also comes from an animal. Therefore, it should be fine.
If it comes from an animal.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. The question is, Yachi Kula shall say or Nami, what by that logic? So you can make the whole shoe out of hair. Why would it be a problem? And the answer is, because that's not called a shoe. Hahu kraka mikri. That's not called a shoe. That's called a kraka. And the Tzadik doesn't say, but it's a kraka in Ma'alagli. So therefore, it has to be made out of leather.
Okay.
And then whatever, it's a shoe made out of hair that they used to have in those days. I don't know. A slipper of some kind, yeah. Even though the Gemara seems to be saying over here that it's fine if the straps are made out of hair, there are other gersayos in the Gemara, and because of that, the poskim say that no, the straps that are used to hold the shoe onto the foot of the yavam should also be made out of leather, and that's what's done. So everything in the shoe is made out of leather, no other materials.
No man-made
materials, and no flax isn't a man-made material either, but yeah. Amalei Rav Kahana L'Shmuel, a basic question of the meaning of the word. All this time we're talking about chalitza. What does chalitza mean exactly? Mimai dehai v'cholta na'ale me'aragle mishlafu. How do you know that the word v'cholta na'ale me'aragle actually means to pull the shoe off his foot? Why? Because it says in the pasuk by a house that has tzaras that you have to take out the chiltzu, you remove the stones that have the tzaras in them. So we see that v'cholta means to remove. But I have another pasuk. The aim is v'ruzihu. Maybe chalitza means to prepare. Dichtin hecholtzu me'itcham anoshem latzava. That says, get ready from yourselves, men, to go out to war against Midian. The maimer hecholtzu gets the title from this pasuk. So maybe faket. Maybe v'choltza nala means you should put on his foot. I mean, she should put on his shoe to get him ready to go out. How do you know he's taking off the shoe? The answer is no. As a matter of fact, the word hecholtzu over there doesn't mean to prepare. It means removing. Remove these people from their houses or from their tents, whatever, because they're still in the midbar, to get ready to go to war. So yes, the word cholot still means to remove. Okay. How about the oksiv yichalitz oni ba'oniyoy? What about the pasuk that says that Hashem will yichalitz the poor person in his poverty? Again, the pashtus there, yichalitz means like to prepare him, to be mezarez him, to help him out. Not to remove him. And the answer is no. It also means to remove. The schar onyoy, yichalitz medinish of gehenim. In the schar, because of the fact that he's poor, because he suffers in this world, the Eibishter will take him out of the din of gehenim. So yes, yichalitz also means to take him out. Okay, Elohad dechtiv choinim malach Hashem saviv livei b'yichalitzim. What about the pasuk, the malach of Hashem's camps and surrounds around those who fear Hashem, b'yichalitzim? Again, b'yichalitzim can't mean to remove them. What is he removing them from? The b'chorah means to strengthen them. No, the answer is the schar yireyav yichalitzim midin eshor gehenim. In the schus of the yireyav, he saves them from the judgment of gehenim. Marshall actually explains that this means not the Yireyev themselves, what are they doing anywhere near Gehenim. It means in the schus of the Yireyev, the Eibishter saves other people, schleps other people out of Gehenim. So again, it means to remove. Okay, what about one more? Elohad dechtiv ba'atzmeisecha yachlitz. What about the pasuk says in Yeshaya, it's an after of Yom Kippur morning, that he'll yachlitz your bones as part of the brachas for a person who gives tzedakah. Va'amar Rabbalazo, zuma ulo sheba brachas. Rabbalazo says, this is the best of all the brachas. What is the bracha of Amarava? The Ruzi Garmi. The words Vatzmeisecha Yachlit means that the Eibishter will strengthen your bones. So we see there clearly, it can't be Yachlit to schlep you out. Why is that the best of the brachas? Different Mepharshim talk about different ideas. One of them is one big thing that a lot of Mepharshim talk about is the bones are basically are the basic part. They're the most fundamental part of the body. So if your bones are strengthened, then it means your whole body is in good shape, and therefore you're able to be more of a keli for the Eibishter's brachas. There's an idea also. I saw something quoted from Menachem Breslover that a person's averus are so to speak inscribed on his bones. Strengthening his bones means that the Eibishter forgives his averus and then takes off that thing. Anyway. But the fact is, v'cholta means to take off the shoes. So how does that fit with all this? So the answer is ain mashma hachi or mashma hachi. It's true. The word yachlis can in fact have both meanings. It can mean to prepare or strengthen, and it can mean to take off. But here you have to say it means to take off. The hacha isak daidach zeruzihu. If here it means to prepare, meaning by putting on the shoe, imken lichturachmona v'cholta nale biragloi. Then the Torah would have to say she's cholitz. She prepares his foot by putting on the shoe. Biragloi on his foot. Me'al ragloi from his foot implies that you're taking something off. Question is, the Gemara asks, you can't say that. Yikos rachmona biragloi, because if the Torah had said biragloi, have I mean a biragloi ein v'shoikloi, and you would think it means a dafka has to be his foot, it cannot be his lower leg, and we learned in the Mishnah that the shoe can be taken off the lower leg. According to Rashi, we learned if the Yavam's foot is amputated, you can still do chalitza on the lower part of the leg that remains, as long as it's below the knee. So therefore, Kosev Rachmana me'al ragloi after the b'shoikloi. Therefore, maybe that's why the pasuk has to use the word me'al ragloi, to imply that it's kosher even if it's done on the part above his foot. So you can't say me'al ragloi comes to teach us that it's taking off the shoe. It's coming to teach us that you can use the leg. The answer is imkein lichtav Rachmana bin me'al ragloi. If that's the case, if the Torah meant to put on the shoe, then it would say v'cholta naloi. She prepares him with his shoe. Bimei al ragloi by putting it on what goes above his foot, meaning on his leg. The fact that it doesn't say that, my mei al ragloi, the fact that it only says from on his foot, shnamina mishlafu. That means taking it off, schlepping it off. And that's the conclusion. Just out of time now, which is too bad because it's an interesting little piece if I got to here on the subject, but we'll learn it tomorrow. Bez Hashem.